The Initial Reaction Podcast is bathing in a 50-win first half of baseball. As Milwaukee Brewers fans know it, love it, 50 and 41, the Milwaukee Brewers are, as the All-Star break is upon us. I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, and I want to talk all about it. And joining me is my colleague, my friend, Andrew Grumman, also from Now Newspapers. Welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
It's always good to chat a little bit of Brewers baseball. You go to a lot of Brewers games. Yeah. You know a lot of what's going on. But it's always fun to look back, especially when there have been as many warm fuzzies as there have been in the first half for Brewers fans. Lots of fun highlights and moments. They have a 5.5 game lead in the NL Central. Nobody is quite sure how they got there, but they are there. It's getting more and more real every day that they could actually do this and win the National League Central with the Cubs struggling fiercely. I think we're all still, you know, cautiously optimistic.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, nobody thinks this is going to be a cakewalk by any means, but I think, Andrew, the thing that's surprising to me is that their run differential suggests that this is the team that's that good. Mm-hmm. If you believe in the run differential concept, which I do and a lot of people do, and it bears itself out, this is a team that's actually pretty good. I think they're actually good.
Yeah, I keep going over in my head, have we reached the point where this is serious?
Yeah.
When is that point that it's serious if we haven't?
And right.
I think we have. And I think it's just because we're at the point now where if the Brewers would win the division by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
Not saying I still think they're going to hold on because I don't know if I'm there yet.
But it's not a shock anymore.
But it wouldn't be a shock anymore.
Right.
And just think about this team's 50 and 41 with how many late leads they let slip up.
Yeah.
More toward the beginning of the year.
I think they were top two or three in that National League of blown saves or losses after they had led.
I think that's what gets fans too is that they've been in almost every game. When they've lost, it's been letting leads slip away for the most part and realizing that that there's potential for more there if they shore up a few key areas, and that's going to be interesting to see as we hit the August 1st trade deadline.
Yeah, the big deadline coming up here in a couple weeks.
I think we're at the point now where the Brewers have to be taken as serious contenders because we're also at the point where the Cubs have to be looked at as not last year's Cubs anymore.
Yeah, you're right. We keep expecting them to turn a corner, and here they are, two games under 500 at the All-Star break. They're not turning a corner. They're starting pitching is injured and is not performing well, and
they're just not living.
They're just not it
the
right
same
now.
Team. And when Wade Davis is their only All Star, and he was probably their biggest question.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know, and Bryant and Rizzo aren't having bad seasons, but they're not getting help from a lot of the other pieces that they thought they would with Ben Zobrist and
Zobrist
Addison
is really
Russell
struggled.
And mm-hmm. Javi Baez has had some. It was ups and downs, and Wilson Contreras has struggled to adapt to being a full-time player. But that, and then the rotation. I mean, Jake Arrieta is not Jake Arrieta of last year.
No.
The Cubs are flawed. The Cardinals are flawed. Pirates are flawed, and maybe the Brewers are the least flawed of all the teams in the division.
I think this is what I do, and I think a lot of fans do this. We say, well, you don't know if a team is for real until Memorial Day. And that came and passed, and the Brewers were fine. And then, oh, you don't know if they're for real until, like, Mother's Day, 4th of July. Like, you keep setting these benchmarks. The All-Star break comes around. There are 9 games above 500, 5.5 up, and you still are like, but this Brewers team isn't supposed to do this.
The reason for caution, too, I think, with Brewers fans is they remember 2014.
Sure. Which, if we're talking about run differential, was a completely different story.
Yes,
that team
exactly.
was supposed to fall, and they did.
And there were teams behind them that I think were
underperforming
to make a run. Now, the Cubs could be that team.
Yeah.
They still could be that team. But 2014, it's still fresh in the minds of a lot of people where, what was it, an 8-game lead in August? And
it was something like
they
that,
they go into San Diego, and K-Rod blows a save to Rene Rivera and starts the road trip from hell, and then from then on,
there's a Mark Reynolds moment in there. There's a lot
Mark
of
Reynolds
stuff.
Mark Reynolds failing to turn a double play in St. Louis. And
a lot of stuff to slow burn.
They're in San Francisco, and I think that was the worst series they played in decades. And,
yeah.
That's the reason. But it's also exciting to see how that was a totally different team. They were doing that with a bunch of veterans, and now there's some veterans mixed in. We don't have all the young guys up here.
Right.
But a lot of the young pieces are contributing at this point, and we're even starting to see Josh Hader contribute and guys like that. coming up. We've seen Orlando Arcia take off.
Uh-huh. And,
we've seen glimpses of Phillips and Brinson come up too, and I think that's another reason why fans are so excited, is they can see it not only for this year, but where this is going
right
down the road.
Let's talk about Orlando Arcia a little bit more, because we're gonna do a draft of our favorite moments from the first half, the best moments. There's a ton to choose from, and I'm gonna go first because I invented the idea here, and I am going to invented the idea. I am gonna start
the first ever to do
the
that.
First ever moments draft, the Groom and Radcliffe moments draft. I'm going to start with June 21st, Orlando Arcia, who has been phenomenal offensively. Yeah. He's come along to the point that you consider him, I would say, a top half shortstop in the National League for a guy that I think we thought maybe wasn't going to get there yet this year. He's really coming on. But June 21st, he did what he does with his glove, which is pretty flashy stuff a lot of the time. Rangers over to grab what figures to be the game-tying single in the ninth against the Pirates. Everybody has seen the highlight, uncorks a one toss bounce that Thames picks up. John Jaso's the batter, 4-3 win over Pittsburgh, a very exciting defensive memory to cap that game coming in the midst of this June where the Brewers weren't exactly like clicking on all cylinders, but seemed to be finding ways to win a bunch of games.
Yeah, I was covering that game and I when the ball was hit, I marked that that was a base hit.
Yes. Scorecard. Of course.
I mean, cause it should have been. And I don't know who the Pirates runner was at second, but he didn't stop.
He was going to score with no problem. So he was going to score
even if that ball slightly got away from Thames. And that was an underrated pick by Thames
because
that was a tough
in-between
hop. And if he doesn't pick it, it's a tie game going to extra innings. And I remember that, too, because it was like a three-hour, 40-minute game.
Of course it was. And only 4-3.
The thing with Arcia is incredible play. Not many shortstops make it, but that is his play. I mean, that's what he's so good at.
Right.
Is ranging that way and throwing blindly. I mean, that is unbelievable. Even when he got to that ball, I thought, he's not going to throw it. He's not going to throw it. He'd throw it, and I'm like, oh, this is popping away here. And he's really good at that. And you know, Carlos Subero, who's kind of been his mentor, the mm-hmm. first base and infield coach, just says that that's what Orlando thrives at, is that type of play where he can throw blindly. He doesn't need to have eyes on a target to
right.
that arm strength where he just kind of flicks the wrist and it gets there. But yeah, unbelievable play. And maybe more exciting than a walk-off homer because you see it more.
Right.
You don't see the only one I can think of like a web gem like that to end a game was Gomez robbing Joey Votto.
Of course. Everyone remembers that. Scaling the wall to take away a home run that would have tied or given the Reds the lead, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
So that's the big one. What is your first-round pick in our moments draft?
Well, there's a couple ones that I went in between. Just kind of how big it was at the time, weighing on it. I think that my biggest moment, at least from an individual player standpoint, shining in it again was Jimmy Nelson's complete game.
Yeah, of course.
On Father's Day, that was coming off. That was in that series also where we'll get to it later. Where Eric Thames hit,
a big home run.
But the Brewers really needed that performance by Nelson. The bullpen was, I think Knebel had pitched a ton in that series.
I think Knebel and Barnes were both unavailable. And I think there was even a third guy that was unavailable. It was a really depleted bullpen.
They lost the night before. Once Thames won it on Friday, they lost on Saturday.
Right.
And this was Sunday. And you just kept, the Brewers got down 1-0, and then they got two solo homers, and then Nelson kept getting into jams, working himself out of jams, and you thought to the point, well, okay, he's done. Then the seventh inning, he comes back out. No, he's done.
Right.
Eighth inning, he's back out. In the ninth, they pushed him, which is so rare with Craig Counsell. Does not do that ever.
Right.
And Jimmy responded. And I think that was another, like, we've seen Arcia take a next step. Jimmy Nelson's done that this year, too.
Oh, 100%.
And that was kind of the big moment in his time emerging this first half. And I just think that was just that's probably the biggest individual pitching performance of the first half, and when the team really needed it.
Completely agree with
you. Needed it on Father's Day.
Completely agree with you. And Jimmy Nelson's emergence is so key to what's been happening here. And this is something that's come up. I've said over and over. I don't think it's happening with Jimmy Nelson. He's old enough. And the numbers were so poor the last couple years, especially the peripheral ones. I mean, forget looking at the straight up ones, but it was not clear to me or to anyone that he was going to be a major league starting pitcher. Forget where in the rotation.
It's unbelievable how he's doing this now. I mean,
he's just crushing people.
Last year he led the league in walks.
And he's totally subtracted his walk count, like cut in half.
He's a completely different pitcher.
Yeah.
And a completely different mindset. He's now on the attack. And,
right.
Kind of what we, Brewers fans wanted Willie Peralta to do.
Oh, yeah,
as
yeah.
Well, and Jimmy's figured it out. And that's been so huge, especially with some of the other starting woes they've had and injuries to guys like Chase Anderson and Junior Guerra.
Yeah.
Jimmy Nelson's been gigantic. And arguably, if it wasn't for what Travis Shaw has done and maybe Eric Thames.
Yeah.
Jimmy Nelson could be the first half MVP.
Oh, I think that's totally true. So many possible first half MVPs. Manny Pena had a home run, a big go-ahead home run in that Father's Day game. Hernan Perez, yeah. I believe, had the game-tying home yeah. run, both in the same inning. So it was it was just a 2-1 game, a complete game performance for Jimmy Nelson. So we talked about Thames. Let me go to my number two pick. June 16th is the date. That's 2 days before you just referred to it in that same series with Jimmy Nelson against San Diego. Eric Thames hits a walk-off home run. It's in 10 innings. Brewers win 6-5. I feel like that's the moment Brewers sort of like the craziness around this team sort yeah. of hit its peak. Like that's Brewers fever was officially here because they had just won 3 out of 4 in St. Louis. They'd won 3 straight. That's a really hard place for them to win games. They went to St. Louis. Thames breaks a tie in the ninth, a 4-4 tie.
Ball off the top of the wall.
Off the top of the wall. An absolute wall scraper. Breaks the tie. They end up winning that game 6-4. So they a huge 3 out of 4 in St. Louis. They come home against San Diego. I want to say they blew a late lead. I'm
yes,
not positive of that.
Yep.
And then he comes up in the 10th with another wall scraper.
That was another Corey Knebel. I think that was one of his blown saves.
Yeah, he's had
a
few.
In the 9th or something like that.
And it's amazing because
Knebel
has had some struggles. And the one that sticks to mind is when they could have beaten Clayton Kershaw and had yeah. it like 1-0 or 2-1 and he blew it with a home run. They lost in extras. Then they had a terrible game the day after that and bounced back from that. He had the blow up against the Yankees. They bounced back and win on Sunday, the last day before the All-Star break.
2-out homer with the Diamondbacks.
Oh gosh, brutal, right? Just brutal. But in this game, Eric Thames comes up, wins the game, and yeah, like
another
that
one that bounced right off the top of the wall in one home.
So close, right? And at that point, I mean, he was going crazy. They ripped off his shirt. It yeah. was just this moment, and it really sort of felt like, yeah, I mean, the Brewers fever really
that
sunk in there.
It was in the midst of his slump too.
Right, because he had that April, an absolute April where he's like the face of MLB, and then he just totally fizzles out. Aaron Judge takes over that role, and he just kind of gets forgotten. I mean, he wasn't even in consideration for the All-Star game, which is pretty impressive considering his insane April. So that was a big moment for him and a big moment for the team.
I think the next one probably for me then would be Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Another big the Mets were a down team in that series. They had a ton of injuries.
Still do. They still can't. I mean, Brandon Nimmo has a collapsed yeah. lung now. Like, nothing is going right for the Mets.
That was when they found out Jurius Familia had his ailment and injuries.
Right. Not long after Syndergaard was ruled
yeah,
out for a lengthy period of time.
Cespedes was still out. And they were just a big mess. And the Brewers had taken it to them pretty good in the first two games of that series. And the Mets, the Mets built a big lead on Sunday. And it felt like kind of that was their
finally
their
gonna get
their
they
game.
Were 7-1
back on track. And Brewers kept fighting back. You know, I think Keon Broxton hit a big home run in that. Jonathan Villar in the same inning as Broxton.
Yeah.
But then they still had the Mets still had a way to escape late in that eighth inning with Manny Pena at the plate, and Pena was a heck of an at bat. And I'm pretty sure he fell behind a couple strikes and just kept falling off pitches and battling. And then all of a sudden, this is before we've seen power from Manny Pena. He's hit more home runs since then.
Yeah, this is
this
May 14th.
This is like his second home run of the year.
Right, right.
And before we kind of knew that he was going to be an okay offensive contributor, he just launched
crushed
a three-run
the ball.
Home run. And it was off Addison Reed, and you could just tell that was kind of had the feeling of the Mets had no that kind of crushed the Mets.
The Mets, yeah, that's that was like this is not going to be our season.
And yeah, that was another Mother's Day memory for the Brewers. You know,
they have
so
many.
Many of them. But again, another game where it flipped late when they haven't teams don't overcome 7-1 deficits, and to do that to complete a sweep of at the time a team that people thought were going to be contenders in the National
yeah.
League, was a big moment for the team and for Manny Pena, who at that time was still, you know, fighting with Jeff Bandy for a lot of the playing time at pitcher.
Brewers won that game 11-9. Manny Pena has been an absolute revelation, one of 50 on this year's Brewers team. He was part of was a player to be named later in a trade for Francisco K-Rod. Rodriguez, for K-Rod from the Tigers, an absolute afterthought. I mean, he was an upper-level organizational depth guy, I think probably a notch above
Look how many other contributors on this year's team are that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
Eric Sogard.
Exactly.
Hernan Perez from the Tigers.
Guys that other organizations didn't want, or at least didn't have room for. And Pena has been, he's a starting catcher in Major League Baseball and a very good one.
David Stearns has done that a lot, just used his waiver claims to try to build depth in AAA, one, but then two, give guys a shot at the big leagues. It's worked out with a lot of guys. It hasn't worked out with certain guys like, you know, Nick Franklin, but they keep trying, and I like that. You know, you give guys that have supposedly had talent or maybe had underperformed to this point, and give them a shot and see what you got with nothing to lose.
My next one, 2 weeks after that, May 27th. I think the one thing, I mean, I've had a lot of great Brewers memories over the last year since 2008 and even a little bit before that. The one thing we haven't had is a no-hitter.
Yeah.
And the Brewers have been close a couple times. Dave Bush famously took one into the eighth. Chase Anderson has surprisingly been a guy who's done it a couple times where he's taken no-hitters deep into games. He had a no-hitter in the eighth against the Arizona Diamondbacks. They were facing Zach Greinke. They had lost, I think, kind of a tough game the night before, and it looked, you know, going up against Greinke did not look promising. He strikes out 11 batters. It's a career high. He allows a single to start the eighth. The Brewers still win that game, and that wasn't, I mean, they didn't finish the job, of course, but again, we're highlighting a moment from a player who has stepped up in a big way. Now, he's hurt, and that's a major detriment to the Brewers, but Chase Anderson finding the velocity, finding the ability to just totally drop the number of hits per nine innings, I mean, by two, I think, which is a massive number in that category, he has become a borderline all-star, if not an all-star, if he's healthy. I think he would have been. You're right. So that was typifying a phenomenal season thus far for Chase Anderson, and the Brewers will try to hold it together without him. They've done that so far, but obviously not having him in the rotation is tough now.
He did that against his old team, too.
That's right.
You know, that was kind of the moment where it went from Chase has shown flashes before and had those months, and I think that outing against the Diamondbacks was where we're like, all right, this guy's
for
a
real
different pitcher this year, not just on a hot streak.
Right.
And then my next moment then, we've had so many that have decided games or won games. This actually was a play that was not in the late innings of a game.
Right.
Orlando Arcia kind of circus episode against the Baltimore Orioles, and Brent Suter, pitcher that runs well, hit a ground ball with Arcia first, and a ground ball is short. Suter beat out the infield single, and Arcia, rounding second base, saw nobody was covering third base, took off. He was going to be safe at third base, but he overslid third base, and instead of trying to just go back to third and get tagged by Manny Machado, he took off for home, seeing that the catcher really wasn't at home plate. So after this big, long rundown, the Orioles totally botched it. They were terrible.
Ran into each other.
The pitcher was in the wrong spot. The catcher was in the wrong spot. They run into each other, run into the umpire. Ed Cedar's halfway on the field. Orlando Arcia finally scores. I thought in the immediate aftermath, when Buck Showalter came out, that he was going to ask for a challenge or something, because the umpire did get in the way of the play.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He just went out to his team and you kind of gathered them. The Orioles were terrible at rundowns that whole series.
Yeah.
Broxton avoided one.
Oh, man.
At first base, but it was a kind of a fun moment where Brewers went from good base running to bad base running to oh,
game.
Boy. You know?
Right. And another word for that is just they're fun.
Yeah.
Which can go both ways. But
and actually, the interesting note about that is Brent Suter joked in the clubhouse afterwards if he got an RBI on the play.
Because it was an infield single for the pitcher.
As it turned out later, Elias gave Brent Suter an RBI.
What? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Why would they do that? That cannot be an RBI.
There is no fathomable explanation as to why that's an RBI.
That is incredible. I had no idea that happened.
The play should have ended when he slid into third base.
Right.
And then that becomes
that's an error. There's an error that needs to be charged there, or at least a fielder's choice.
Brent Suter has an RBI.
That is insane. I did not know that. No, not a lot was made of that. Brent Suter, who is one of the more enjoyable human beings to be around, loves playing baseball, has had a couple very effective outings in a pinch here, and is going to remain in the rotation at this point. I mean, I think the conventional thinking was they would bring up Michael Blazek to start, or Taylor Youngman would fill in, or they would, I mean, maybe Willie Peralta finally gets it together. P.S. That's not happening. Or at least not right now. So now Brent Suter is the guy. And, it was funny because that there was a, it was already kind of a fluky play because they expected a bunt and he kind of like bounced the ball in between a triangle of fielders. Play, winds up with the infield single and Orlando Arcia, who has taken a scoop of a guy's ice cream in the front row.
That was the same series, wasn't it?
It was against the Orioles. That was a Saturday game and well, no, it wasn't. It wasn't against the Orioles.
That's right. Same homestand.
Right. And also emblematic because they swept the Orioles. They have struggled so much at home this year. And then the Orioles series is sort of a turnaround. Now they're 3 games above 500 at home this year. And, that was big for them to just sort of sweep through, and they carry the momentum from that series over into beating the Cubs and taking 2 out of 3 in New York. Which brings me to my next moment. The New York Yankees series. The, certainly the win Sunday was big as sort of to go in the break on a high note, and, the loss Saturday was kind of a tough blow, but the Friday night game where Jesus Aguiar, another one of these guys who was somebody else's trash and is the Brewers' treasure, he, was released by the Indians. The Brewers picked him up. He hit 2 home runs in the game on Friday night in the Bronx, including a grand slam, his first career grand slam, 7 RBIs for Jesus Aguiar. That broke a tie at the time, made it 8-4. Brewers go on to win. Really exciting moment, especially on the national stage. Like, I think everybody was sort of thinking, okay, the Brewers are really good now. They're going to go to New York, big spotlight right before this all goes down. And a lot of people have been writing about the Brewers this last week. And sure enough, they come through with a major win on Friday night.
From a guy that kind of embodies what this team is.
Yes, because he's a fun guy.
Fun guy, getting a shot and taking
making the most of it.
Another moment, a guy, talk about a guy proving himself, Travis Shaw.
Yes.
And it was an early season game, but it was in St. Louis. I believe that was the first time the Brewers had won a series in St. Louis and forever.
Since the dawn of man.
It was a long time.
Since I was born.
But Travis Shaw, 3-run home run in the extra innings to give the Brewers the lead in that one. The Cardinals are always this, with Brewers fans.
Mental roadblock,
yeah. And that series and that swing, kind of, got the Brewers past that. At least at the beginning of this year, by winning a series in St. Louis. I don't remember the exact year, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
That was a big early season, confidence booster for that group. And Travis Shaw, just think about what he's meant to this team in general.
Oh, man.
Don't you think Boston could use a third baseman like that? I mean, what a trade by David Stearns to get Shaw. Mauricio Dubon, who was in the Futures game, and this All-Star weekend.
Oh, it's just a fleecing.
Minor league pitcher that's just starting to come back from an injury, and a player to be named later of it's a wild card at this point.
Yeah.
How young he is. For Tyler Thornburg, who, unfortunately for Tyler, is not going to pitch this year.
Yeah, he's got a chronic arm issue potentially. Yeah. And I think at the time, Brewers fans, or at least I felt this way, should have been super satisfied with that deal.
Yeah,
no matter how it paid dividends. And I don't think, obviously no one thought Travis Shaw was going to be a superstar. It was more like he's going to be a fine third baseman until they can finally produce a third baseman. That has been a recurring problem for the Milwaukee Brewers. And just the fact that Thornburg was their best, was their best reliever last year. He definitely was a commodity that team should covet. The Red Sox wanted him and they got him. And I think Mauricio Dubon was seen as the sort of steal of that particular transaction. And maybe Travis Shaw puts together a good year. Well, he's got more home runs than anybody, any third baseman the Brewers have had since 2012 with Aramis Ramirez. So, and that's just at the midway point.
And by the way, I think he's gone like 50 some games without an error.
Yeah. Which is incredible because nobody saw that coming. And he's been, he could be an all-star. He wasn't really in the conversation. Third base is just really stacked in the NL, but he could have been an all-star. And so having him on the team has been obviously huge. The corner infield spots couldn't have been a bigger question mark coming into the season and couldn't be a bigger asset asset as we stand here at the midway point.
And even the guys they got playing behind Thames and Shaw, Hernan Perez at third base, and Eric Sogar can play third base, Aguiar at first base. So, and Craig Counsell's done a very good job of continuing to get all these guys in. There's not a guy that stays out of the lineup very long.
Right.
And the Brewers have a very good bench. I think that's a very underrated part of this team when they're all healthy. If you have either a VR or Sogard on the bench with, you know, with an Aguiar and a...
Right. Or Stephen Vogt even that they picked up off.
Stephen Vogt and Manny Pena. Now, the catching position has been great. You know, Jeff Bandy cooled off and got
demoted,
to the
minors.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a lot of the underrated moves that... Or maybe the flow under the radar moves that David Stearns made have all paid off in those first.
Yeah, Stephen Vogt's had a pretty small sample, but had a 2-home run game
and
to go ahead and win again.
And embodies that. I mean, here's a guy that was really good in the first half for Boston last year, and not first half to this point. He had already started to cool by this point last year.
Right.
And a guy that looks like he's learned from that and taken the next step as a hitter. And then you got Boston, who's still trying to figure out who the heck to play up there.
I know. People wanting them to trade for Shaw.
It's just a nightmare. And it shows you what you got to pay to get relievers, though.
Yep.
And that's and how fickle relieving is in Major League Baseball.
Nobody cashed in more on that than the Brewers last year. Got a top prospect from San Francisco, Phil Bickford, who hasn't worked out yet because he's been suspended and injured.
Jefferson, the Lucroy trade.
Yep. Jefferson, the Lucroy trade to bring back some of their top talent. Louis Brinson, of course, is the name everyone remembers. Luis Ortiz is another one. Ryan Cordell at AAA. So the Brewers are making the most out of their relief prospects and building the bullpen exactly how I think they should, which is... We're not going to, you know, don't sign any big name guys.
Yeah.
Even guys who are healthy, like David Riske famously. Don't sign those guys. Just go after guys that are underappreciated or cheaper. Maybe they're coming off an injury, whatever it is. I love the Neftali Feliz signing. It didn't work out. They moved on, and I think that was the right thing to do. And they've got this guy, Corey Knable, who's an all-star.
The Brewers are in the market. That teams like the Brewers with their market size and what they can pay for salary should never get into the high-paying relievers.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, you could trade for one at the deadline or something, but don't go all in on your reliever. But like, the Scott Linebrink move is never going to happen
again. Coming into this year, it made no sense. People say, oh, they didn't address the bullpen coming into this year. Well, why should they have? They were expected to be a non-contender, and a non-contender should not spend
a lot of money
on the bullpen.
Yeah, no, that's very right.
And now, you're right. Neftali Feliz, good idea, just didn't work. And relief pitching is kind of all about that.
I mean,
you look at how many relievers have had great years one year and not good years the next year. There are only so many Servets.
Right.
Rollis Chapman, Craig Kimbrell. I mean, maybe a couple more. Look at Mark Melancon. The Giants spent so much money on Mark Melancon. And he's
How's that going, guys?
And now he's on the DL.
And they still
have to pay him for, I think, 4 more years.
Yeah, Aroldis Chapman is about the only sure thing, it seems like, here in the relief market.
Yeah, Kimbrell are the only two I can think of.
Yeah. So let's talk one about relievers here a little bit more and talk about Corey Knable. And I'm going to draft this, even though I'm going to say right now, this is not my favorite draft pick here. June 22nd, Knable sets himself a major league record. He goes, it's his 38th consecutive appearance as a reliever with a strikeout. Here's my problem with it. Now, I have no problem with anybody being on the Major League Baseball record book. That's cool. There's so much stats and context in baseball, so much rich, you know, it's such a rich depth that you can go to, and you can find record-breaking performances just about every day. So it's great to be on the books, and Corey Knable has obviously been very, very good for the Brewers, so I'm happy that he has gotten this record. But what a strange series of qualifiers you need to throw in there. You know, for a while it was to start a season, you know, relief pitchers. Obviously, starting pitchers have much longer streaks of appearances in which they've recorded at least one strikeout. It's not necessarily indicative that Knable has been awesome. He has been very good, but he's also given up some key home runs. And honestly, I think right now is probably a buy-high time on Corey Knable because he struggled a little bit late in the season. Even when he got that save on Sunday, it didn't look like his command was that great. And don't get me wrong, I love what the guy has done. I've been very comfortable with him coming into the ninth inning. I'm not the least bit nervous watching him pitch like I am if K-Rod is pitching or something. But I think, like a lot of relievers, I wouldn't expect the Knable experience to last forever.
He has a lot of blown saves for somebody that's had a lot of success.
Yes.
And he's also come in a lot of one-run situations.
He has a lot of tough situations, right.
And
he's a fly ball pitcher.
Knebel's success comes down to whether or not he can throw his curveball for a strike that night. Because if he can't, teams can sit on the fastball and he goes to it a lot when he can't throw it.
Certainly did Sunday when he blew away a few guys in the Yankees.
Somebody ambushes a fastball and you got a solo home run.
Right.
Not saying he has not been good or been an all-star, but he has blown saves by giving up solo home runs.
Yeah. Yeah, and he certainly used his fastball to perfection to beat the Yankees. I mean, he looked good at
that curveball.
No, I know the curveball.
But he did get an out with it, the second out of the inning, which was big because it was a 3-2 curveball
that he threw. It was beautiful.
And he got a ground out with it.
Yep. Yeah, he's going to give up some of those home runs. He's a fly ball guy, and it's not nearly as bad as Feliz was this year, so you could say that much. He definitely is the right guy to come in that spot. Jacob Barnes has been very good in the setup role, and they, again, you know, a middle-round draft pick. They've found ways. Knebel was part of that Yovani Gallardo trade several years ago with the Rangers, so they have found a way to build this out of scratch, basically. I mean, these are guys that aren't coveted. They're not big contract guys yet. So Knebel will represent the Brewers in Miami at the All-Star Game, which is a pretty cool thing. And let's go. I think it's your turn. You got the next moment, right?
Yeah, this was a very, very early one. It was against the Cubs. I believe it was their first win against the Cubs.
All right.
Another great game. Ryan Braun ended up scoring on the wild pitch on April 7th.
Yes.
To beat the Cubs 2-1 in extra innings. Brewers offensively were terrible that night, if I remember.
Terrible the whole first week of the season.
Brett Anderson was pitching for the Cubs that night.
Yeah.
And he later got bombed. And
right.
The Brewers couldn't do much. Jimmy Nelson pitched for the Brewers. The Cubs had so many chances to win that game late in the game. The Brewers, I believe, turned at least three double plays to get out of jams. Jared Hughes got one. Brent Suter, that was his first time up. And he turned a double play. The Brewers couldn't touch Mike Montgomery in relief. Joe Maddon kind of went to the well one too many innings, and you could tell Montgomery was starting to lose it because Braun singled to start that inning. I think that was their first hit since the sixth.
Okay.
And then Aguiar had a great at-bat to walk. And then Jet Bandy was hit by a pitch. So the bases loaded. And Manny Pena was up, and Montgomery got ahead 0-2 on him, but then he bounced one to the backstop. Braun came home with the wild pitch, and it was the first win against the Cubs of the year, and one of their first major feel-good wins of the year after a kind of a tough start to the season. Another walk-off win at home in front of, you know, with the Cubs fans there.
Yeah, it's a good feeling when that happens.
In a game where they really escaped, I mean, they had no business being in that position.
Right.
But got a lot of big outs to get out of jams on their pitching staff, and then a walk-off wild pitch.
Yeah, I got to say, I barely remember that game.
Yeah.
I do remember it, but barely. It's amazing how much baseball we've had since then that's been so exciting and thought-provoking and just barely remember that. But that first week of the season, I'd love to go back, and I'm going to go back and listen to my podcast from then, because I remember, oh man, it's exactly what we thought they were. They're a bad team defensively. They're not particularly gifted offensively. We're not really thinking this is going to be a good year. They were 2-5
the year, that game.
That made them 2-5, I believe, or 2-4 at that point. I'm not sure.
2-4, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, they would lose the game after that.
Check that, 2-3, because they lost 3-4 to the Rockies.
Yes, that's right. With, you know, Feliz blowing a game in that series, too.
And then they lost the next two nights to the Cubs. They lost 2-3. Then they went into Toronto and started that
and
great
swept
run
it,
trip.
Right?
Toronto,
two-game sweep.
They did well. They won 2 in Toronto, 3-4 in Cincinnati, and then they went to Wrigley Field and lost 2-3 there, but
So my last moment comes from that series in Cincinnati you just mentioned, where they won 3-4. Where Eric Thames went absolutely bananas, 5 games in a row where he hits a home run. He hit 2 in one game, just tore up Great American Ballpark, just crushed it.
The Reds don't like him.
The Reds don't like him, and this set off a number of things. You had the tests, Major League Baseball tests. Everybody suddenly watching. How many times is he going to get tested for steroids, or performance enhancing drugs, I should say, which is a funny thing to talk about. There are other players that are doing next to nothing that are getting the exact same number. You know, this random testing concept. I think it probably is random. So there was that. The fact that David Stearns found a guy through, you know, video footage from Korea to bring him over to play here and sign him to a 3-year contract, taking the place of a guy who was the home run leader in the National League last year, and Chris Carter. that was just mystifying in and of itself as a move, and it has paid off, or at least it paid off in April when he was absolutely tearing it up. And cooled off in May, like we talked about, but has picked it up again since then and seems to be swinging a pretty confident bat. And it's just Eric Thames is absolutely one of the biggest stories of the season. It's amazing to me that I'm sitting here in July not having him be the headline. Right. Because you could easily go, well, Jimmy Nelson or Chase Anderson or Orlando Arcia or, I mean, I don't know, the Manny Pena home runs on Mother's Day and Father's Day. Like, there are so many, Travis Shaw, there's so many stories with this team. Guys we didn't think we'd be talking about at this point in the season, and here we are. Corey Knebel, for that matter. Yeah. It's been a wild run.
Yeah, and Thames, that April, it's unbelievable. I mean, he was only swinging at his pitches. He was laying off everything. That's been the major difference with him. He's swinging at, he's chasing now.
Right.
He wasn't in the first half, and of course there's been adjustments made to how he's pitched, and he's adjusted back. And I think another big thing is he was not ready for the rigors of the major league season again. And,
yeah.
And it's different than what he's been used to.
This is a
guy that was working out hardcore, lifting, doing all this stuff every day, and you can't do that over the course of this season.
Right.
He's back. I mean, I think if you would have said at the All-Star break, here's Eric Thames' numbers, 250, was he 23 home runs, would you take it? Of course, everyone would.
Of course, yeah.
It's just that crazy April kind of set
the bar so high. Right.
And, he's already way surpassed the value if you look at contract versus what you would expect someone on that contract to produce value-wise. He's already surpassed that. And plays a good defense at first base, and he's a great guy to have in the clubhouse. He's a leader in there. And
And
they have a nice mix now where Council does not have to play him every single day at first base.
No,
with Jesus Aguiar, they can give him breaks. They can, rest him. And I think that'll set him up to have success in the second half.
So I'd be putting you on the spot to ask you for one last draft pick because we're kind of past our point of our prep here. I do know Jet Bandy had a major hit in the top of the ninth against San Diego when they were in San Diego for a big win, a big late win. I mean, one of the moments I'm remembering right now is seeing the tweets come out that the Brewers are actually thinking about buying at the deadline, and what that might take. We did see some debuts, like you had mentioned at the outset, Josh Hader, Lewis Brinson. It was super exciting to see those guys on this team, Brett Phillips. And, a couple of those guys are now back in AAA, but they're doing great things down there. A lot of things. I mean, Jonathan Villar has had some big hits, even though he's really, really struggled, both as a hitter and as on the base paths. But he's had some big hits this year as well. So
I think maybe there's not one moment that's tied to it, or maybe it was when he first came up in that Dodgers game against Kershaw, where they eventually ended up losing.
Yeah.
But Eric Sogard.
Oh, of course. We haven't talked nearly enough about Eric Sogard.
I believe that... was that the game against Kershaw he homered? Was that a two-run? They gave him the lead against... Maybe that wasn't Kershaw, but it was that Dodgers series, I want to say.
Yeah, where he homered a pretty solid shot down the right field line. That was his first home run or second home run. He had a big home run in San Diego as well that gave them the lead in extras that ended up not working out because Hunter Renfroe hit a game-winning home run in the bottom half. I want to say that was against Feliz, but I'm not actually positive of that. That might have been Carlos Torres. Either way, he's been something. Eric Sogard, nerd power man at second base. And
I just looked at the Dodgers series and I don't see him homering at all.
No, I don't think that was against the Dodgers, but either way,
it was someone at home. He had a big,
a
big home run against.
And either way, just him being up here and filling one of the gaps that the Brewers didn't think they'd have. The fact that the fact that Jonathan Villar has struggled, they've been able to plug Eric Sogard in, and he's a little nicked up right now. Is going to come off the DL after the All-Star break, and we'll see how far that goes. I mean, I think everyone expects the bottom to fall out eventually, but in limited playing time, Eric Sogard has been awesome.
And Sogard's a second-round pick.
He was very successful for a time in Oakland.
And he never was a bad player in Maine.
Right.
But he never showed this type of contact and never showed this any kind of power.
Right. No, you're right about that.
So, it's cool to see that type of... someone like that come up and take advantage of an opportunity. And it's going to be interesting in the second half once Eric Sogard comes back. How does Craig Council manage that?
Because
it's very easy to fall into playing him. And I'm not saying they shouldn't. But Jonathan Villar, can't give up on him yet.
No, he's still your second baseman next year. He still is. I mean, it would take a catastrophic
and,
second half for that not to happen.
Kershaw, it was off Matt Harvey.
Ah, yes, in the Mets.
Yeah, so that was what I was thinking. I was thinking of an elite pitcher, surprising home run.
Yeah.
And it was Matt Harvey.
So let's dovetail away from the Brewers real quick, because we are, in fact, covering high school baseball as well. We're getting ready for the postseason, the summer baseball postseason. The first round game scheduled for Tuesday, second round Wednesday. Sectionals the subsequent Monday, where two wins will be what it takes to get to the state tournament at Capco Park in Mequon. My understanding of the field right now is it's West Bend West tournament to lose. We've been in this position before where it's West Bend West tournament to lose. We could say that probably every other year, if not every year. And, I mean, the thing is, even though West Bend West has an insanely good pitching staff, I think they probably could have a number one on every, you know, there are four guys that could be number ones on any other team. But you know from experience, from personal experience, that sometimes it just takes one game to beat West Bend West, right?
Yeah, in this one and done format, it's crazy. Like you said, '08, you know, was coaching at Kenner Moraine, and we made the state tournament kind of as a team that got hot.
Yep.
Hot late. Didn't have the team full of superstars, like, you know, or any of, you know, just a team full of good players.
Yeah.
That got hot. Got a pitcher that got hot. We played West Bend West. That's back when the 8 teams made it to state.
Yeah. This is a state quarterfinal at Buchholz Park.
It would be a sectional final now.
Yep.
All we heard all week was, well, West Bend West, West Bend West, West Bend West. And they were.
I mean, that's all I was saying all week, and I was covering Kettle Moraine.
Coming off that a three-year stretch where I think they lost, what, 3-4 games total
with
that.
Defending state champions that brought back a ton of talent from the state championship team in 2007.
Yeah, a major league draft pick in Paul Henneke. And they were loaded. And they absolutely were loaded. And but that game was a perfect example of what can happen in baseball, where the outfield, we played them deep. They had a lot of long fly balls that just kind of died. Then they hit a lot of loud outs that were right at people. Kettle Moraine played good defense, made all the plays, and then one West Bend West made one mistake defensively. Their shortstop booted a ball, capitalized for four runs, and that was enough. And I think that was the biggest shock. People still talk about it.
I still talk about it like every year.
Because Kettle Moraine were a good team that year, but nobody expected that.
No.
And I talked to coaches that were also in that state tournament. They were rooting hard for the upset because they were. I just remember people coming up afterwards, West Bend West parents, wondering what they were going to do with their hotel rooms.
Yeah. Well, I myself had gone to cover Kettle Moraine, and I had made plans that evening because I didn't expect that Kettle Moraine could possibly beat West Bend West. It was almost like, got to drive all the way to Stevens Point to see the team lose, right? And then, not that I would say that out loud,
exactly.
KM at the time, but you know, that's what I'm thinking. And I had to drive back home and then drive back to Stevens Point the next day to watch Kettle Moraine play again. They reach the state. Yep, they play a ridiculously ugly game against Brown Deer, make the state championship game, and then lose. It was a really close game
one out of the six. To forget what happened after that.
I don't remember the final score. I want to say 12-1.
It was something like that. Yeah,
Marquette got hot late, and that was that. That was that. But it was still.
It was a point where you run out of pitching after an extra innings, 13-12 semifinal.
And that's the thing about this tournament, especially now with the pitch counts the way they are. You have to have three or four legit pitchers because your third and fourth guy, they're going to be the guys who are pitching in those major moments.
Watch the weather this week, because if there's any rain, and Wednesday for the regional finals is looking iffy, that can change everything.
Right, because now a pitcher that wasn't going to be available for Wednesday is available because the game is 2 days later.
And now what do you do if you're a team that thinks it can make sectionals coming up on Monday? If the game gets pushed back to Thursday, you're okay. But if it gets pushed back to Friday, anyone you go over 74 pitches that day can't pitch Monday.
It's almost like...
Now sectional day... next Monday.
Yeah.
If that gets pushed back in any way, any pitcher that pitches a certain amount of pitches won't
be
available
pitching
for state.
Capco Park,
And the WIA coaches have asked, well, is there going to be like a waiver? Or WIA is not going to give a waiver.
No, the whole point is safety. They're not going to waive that just
because
it's inconvenient.
I mean, I think maybe for the playoffs in that scenario, you can go back to the old innings limit for the playoffs, because then you're just... Then you can, you know, have seven innings and then take days off. But, yeah, the pitch count rule is going to change things. Summer baseball teams have learned this year, and then you've always known that you need more pitching than spring baseball.
Of course.
But you need three or four options at this time of year, maybe a fifth in an emergency, to be able to win a state championship in summer baseball. And that's why you see certain teams compete on certain nights with the top dogs. Like, you'll see teams in this area, they have their 1 and 2s, can compete against West Bend West. Maybe not West Bend West, they're rolling everyone this year.
Sure.
But Oak Creeks and the Franklins and the, you know, the Germantowns, teams that have been really good all year. But then you get into some, you know, late in the weeks and Saturdays, and you see these big scores, and it's just pitching depth. And then that's what separates the best teams this time of year is normally the teams that that can run the most options out there, because a lot of these teams are talented. There's so many talented teams. I just named a few, and you know, I don't think I put Marquette in there and Franklin. And, so it's wide open, and it's, again, there's not a dominant pitcher out there, too many dominant pitchers out there, like Ty Weber, who stood out last year.
Willed Menominee Falls to a second straight state championship last year.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of some of the top guys in our area, Pewaukee, Patrick Tomforte's got a top arm.
Yeah. And Nathan Burns at West Bend West.
Nathan Burns at West Bend West, who we'll see when he can pitch. He's been hurt.
Right.
Hopefully he can go for sectionals if they should make it that far.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Waukesha North is Classic A player of the year.
Yeah, Dylan Conrad, sure.
Who's very good. Those type of players can make a difference this time of year. And because it's set up to where if you're a top team and you have a bye to Wednesday, you can pitch your player on Wednesday, then you can pitch them in one of the sectional games.
Yeah.
And then one of the state games if you get that far.
So much calculus that goes into looking at baseball scores. You almost have to take non-conference games completely with a grain of salt.
You almost need to throw them out.
Yeah, because those aren't your top pitchers pitching. And more than any other sport, you are sort of having to calculate, well, can we get away with pitching a certain guy here? You know, you don't have to worry about that in basketball or football. Your guys play what they play. But here, the pitchers have to be selected carefully.
It's a big gamble if you're a high seed that doesn't have a bye. So, like, you're a four or five that doesn't have a bye. On Tuesday. Now, this is the first year they're playing regional games back-to-back days.
Right.
So, if your pitcher throws 30 or more pitches Tuesday, you can't use him Wednesday.
Right.
So, do you start that top guy?
And just pull him after 30 pitches.
And pull him after 30 pitches, or if you're in a tight game, then you keep him going. Do you try to get by without... It's a tough decision.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing... There's a handful of teams that you could...
Right.
That are all, you know, that are just ultimate. You know, that... They're not going to.
Right.
So, but there are a lot of lower seeds that could beat, that have one pitcher that could beat somebody.
Right.
And that's an interesting decision to make. I think, personally, you never hold back in this level.
Always let your big gun go first.
Yeah. When you get to state, okay, maybe you can take chances there. Say, there's always one sectional that gets matched up with the up north sectional.
And the up north teams have not traditionally matched up.
Sometimes they have a guy that can hang in there with pitching. They're usually good, but not state level good.
Right, right.
And you can, Menominee Falls did this last year. They started Logan Roble against, I believe it was
Sheboygan Falls. Yep.
Then they could save Ty Weber for Marquette. That was probably the only way they were going to win a state title. I think once you get to state, you can map that out because you're either there or you win a state title.
Win
or you know.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I would never leave a bullet in the gun because, I've seen so many teams have their best pitchers sitting out and they lose.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you. I mean, I understand that, but I also think like the sectional is the same way. Once you get there, either you go to state or you don't. You don't want to be completely fizzled out in the sectional final.
You also don't want to lose and think what if.
Oh, that's a very good point. Of course. Because you never know how those matches
play out.
But
that's a tough decision for teams that only have maybe one or two pitchers.
Yeah. Because you don't have many bullets to burn.
Yeah,
the thing. That's why that depth is so important on the mound.
And then that's why baseball is the game it is. It's a game of thinking and strategy.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And decision making. Whereas, like you said, basketball and football, you're putting your best players out there every
time. Yep. Oak Creek, as you mentioned, one of the top teams to watch for. They're a top seed in their bracket. Franklin, the 2 seed in that sectional. Age old rivals. They've met. Oak Creek has won 2 out of 3, including in the GMC championship game. That's a really interesting one. Marquette will be favored in their sectional. It's a wide open sectional after that.
Yeah.
Teams like Waukesha North, Kettle Moraine, Pewaukee, Brookfield East, Brookfield Central, any one of these teams.
I think you don't have to look far to look Waukesha West is the 11th, third to worst seed in that sectional. They beat Kettleman Rain twice. They got,
which is the fourth seed.
They got pitchers that are going to pitch out of college.
Yeah.
That's a very deep sectional. That should show you where.
Well, Wauwatosa East, exactly what you're talking about.
Wauwatosa East is the 12th
seed. Pewaukee has to decide. Right. And Pewaukee has to decide what to do with their top pitcher.
That's a very deep sectional. And then the other local sectional is West Bend West. Can anyone beat them? Germantown is the 2 seed in that. And if you look at their conference results with West Bend West.
Not promising.
No. And West Bend West. But West Bend West has been in this position before.
And what has happened?
And last year, they were maybe not as dominant, but they had the same kids a year earlier that should have went on, and they lost in the sectional semifinal.
Yep.
So
keep an eye on
Menominee Falls is also in that sectional. They're the 3 seed in that sectional.
Keep an eye on Homestead, the 4, yes, because they have won 13 consecutive games going into the postseason. They seem to have some decent depth on pitching, and they've come around, and that's a team that that I think could be a pretty big threat to West Bend West.
And I think a team in a one-game setting that can be dangerous in that sectional. They've struggled of late, just when games are piling up on them. Nicolet could be a team that could pull an upset as a 6 seed in that sectional. They've been in the top 10 in the state at some point this year.
Yeah. Sneaky team. 10th seeded Grafton, by the way. Yeah. Keep an eye on them. They have some promising kids. Just be Pewaukee and a crazy escape job. Again, non-conference, so take it with a grain of salt, but it was still, they've had some close calls.
An incredible over-the-shoulder catch with the bases loaded.
To save things.
To save the game in that one.
Beautiful.
So it's wide open. West Bend was obviously the favorite, but wide open, I would say, after that. This is a very good Oak Creek team. Don't get me wrong, they win a lot of games, they know how to win in big moments, but they're probably not as talented as if you stack up a lot of these great Oak Creek teams. They're very good, very talented.
Right.
But they're not dumb. They're not as far separated as other teams. From other teams as maybe they are in certain years.
You can check out my feature on the Homestead baseball team's winning streak here with kind of a focus on Bradley Wolt, a good football player who almost didn't come out for baseball, and it's a good thing he has. He's been leading the charge for the Highlanders. That's at myozakinow.com.
Multi-sport athlete.
Oh, yes, multi-sport athletes. We sing those praises here, especially especially because we know a lot of coaches feel that way as well. You can check out all our coverage of baseball, state baseball, and the previous rounds at mycommunitynow.com, lakecountrynow.com, our all area team at Lake Country Now, all area softball team just came out, will come out this week. You can check that out online or in the Thursday or Wednesday if you get the Maguango Chief editions of the paper, our all area baseball team and all suburban baseball team right around the corner as well. So keep an eye out for that. Grooman, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, enjoy the rest of the Brewers season, everybody. We'll talk again next week or the week after. Take care.